The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Manchester City drop points yet again, throwing away a two-goal lead to draw 2-2 with Crystal Palace on Saturday, while Liverpool and Manchester United disappointed everyone with a 0-0 draw in the prime fixture of the weekend on Sunday afternoon. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Call Podcast, episode 437. We've got a good amount to get to this week. Like I mentioned, that Manchester City game is fresh on everyone's minds. But first of all, Javier, how are you doing, man?
Doing well. It was a good weekend, you know, footy-wise, and I also went to a nice vacation in Cancun, so can't be happier with that vacation, but I was sad to have to come back home to DC to rainy, cold from, you know, being at the beach in the summer. I'd never done, you know, one of those, I'd gone to Peru, but in Peru, it's like, it generally doesn't really get that hot or that cold, and it's always kind of always cloudy. So I'd never really gone to like a place where it's like full on like hot in the winter and like just completely different weather to where I was at, you know. So
yeah. I've only ever done that once in Barbados, right after Christmas one year when we were in high school, and that walk out of the airport is always rough when your body starts getting used to the heat and all of a sudden you're thrown right back in an ice bath of sorts.
Exactly.
But did you get to watch many of the matches? I hope not, actually. I know you do a podcast where we try to talk about these things, but I really hope you didn't distract yourself with Premier League this weekend.
Alex, I was able to get internet on the resort. So while I was in a cabana down at the beach, I had internet, and I was able to pull it up on my phone there on the side. And I was able to watch actually a decent bit of the matches. You know, I wasn't fully paying attention to a lot of them, but I did go back and watch the highlights. You know, I obviously was able to watch most of the Arsenal game. Thankfully, we were at the airport for like when the Arsenal game was happening the whole entire time. So I just watched the game at the airport, which was awesome.
You were already waiting, so, and yeah. Got to watch
it.
Yeah,
because anyway. We had an international flight, and we got through in like 30 minutes through security. So we had 2.5 hours to kill, and that was the Arsenal game.
Okay, nice. So that worked out.
Yeah, it was well planned trip. Yeah.
Let's start with this Man City Crystal Palace game, because I feel like this was the most eventful match of the weekend. It ended 2-2. City, like I mentioned in the intro, went ahead 2-0 with goals from Jack Grealish and Rico Lewis in the 24th and 54th minute, respectively. And then a 75th minute goal by Jean-Philippe Mateta brought it back to 2-1. And then a penalty right at the last kick of the match, basically, given away by Phil Foden, got Crystal Palace the points, and they walked out of there with a 2-2 draw when Mikel Olise scored the penalty. They obviously were without Erling Haaland again for this match after missing him for the Luton match. And frankly, it really showed. I don't think it's a guarantee that City definitely would have won this game if Haaland was in, but it felt like Crystal Palace sort of prepared accordingly in anticipation of Haaland not being there, packed the box very condensely. Their whole defensive shape was basically within the 18-yard box, like the width of that 18-yard box, gifting Manchester City the wings. And while they went behind from some well-worked goals for Manchester City, over the long haul, you've got to credit Palace for their fortitude to stick to that, knowing that, you know, City and this defense that will give you some opportunities. It's just up to you as a team to, you know, defend resolutely and then take your opportunities when they come to you. So I've added a graphic into our little outline that we prepare every single week that has, you know, all of Pep Guardiola's points totals at this point of the season since he joined Manchester City. And this is his lowest points total with 34 points. But Javier, you mentioned to me before we started recording that I added this kind of preparing for a woe is Manchester City section, but I actually added that graphic specifically to point out that last season, 2020 to 2021, they had 35 points at this point of the season and they were sitting in second. And they still won the league that season. That's the reason I've added this, is that it doesn't matter that City don't have many points right now. It doesn't matter that they're going away for the Club World Cup for the next week or so. they're still going to win the league. Erling Haaland's going to come back. Kevin De Bruyne, I'm sure, will be back in January. They're going to go on their 14 match winning streak.
We don't have the full picture yet, Alex, because if they don't seem to be as deep as they have been in previous years. So, you know, if they have to play the same starting 11 that they've been playing, basically with, you know, a few variations, slight variations, because it's really like it's like a Kanji at left back or Ake, but really he's been playing both of them at the same time. And, you know, it's other than that, he's pretty much picked the same starting 11 when he can, when they've been fit this season. Obviously, no De Bruyne. But when you bring De Bruyne into the lineup, okay, you have to bench one of like Foden or Doku, you know, because those are that's the other variation like up top that they have.
Well, no, De Bruyne would come into the midfield roles, and, you know, Foden and Doku have been playing out on the wings. I feel like it would be...
Well, no, Foden's been playing that role in the midfield, you know, pretty much this whole season. As when, you know, when he's played, he's been much more central, trying to pull the strings. You know, they don't have Gundogan there anymore. They don't have, you know, Bernardo Silva has been playing a much deeper role this season. So it's a lot, much less creative of, you know, at times he has been creative, but much less so than previous seasons. So it's really fallen a lot on Phil Foden, you know, and I think that he will be moved out wide and De Bruyne will be put in the middle, and Doku and Foden will be, you know, competing for that wing spot.
And Grealish.
And Grealish, yeah. So that's a lot of players that, you know, yeah, sure, they'll have some depth there. But outside of that, I think Manchester United aren't. Rodri goes down.
Manchester City, you mean?
Manchester City, yeah. So, God, not Manchester United.
They've Manchester got much City, bigger problems.
They do. But Manchester City don't have the depth from previous years. Now, having said that, why I said at the beginning we don't have the full picture is because they could still go out and buy a couple more players in January and get rid of a Calvin Phillips that has been useless for them and you know, get $30 million there, maybe, you know, buy a couple of players, and who knows how much impact that's going to have on City. So I think players like Mateus Nunes, who I thought would have more of an impact right now, hasn't made a huge impact. I wonder if he's going to, you know, be relevant in the second half of the season, but there are players there for City, like Rico Lewis, who played as well again there today. And I know Guardiola trusts a lot in the youngsters that he has in the team. So, but you could see, like you said, Alex, in this game, you know, City are just there to be had defensively this season. I think they're like, I don't know what signings they would necessarily have to make, but the players that they have playing right now aren't performing at the same level they were last year defensively.
Which I think is fair to the degree that you mentioned in our previews. And frankly, a lot of people mentioned after winning a treble, there is the sort of natural drop off in intensity. It's hard to get yourself as a team and as an individual back up to the level of focus.
City don't press nearly as hard as like they do still press really well, but it's just not that like maybe one or two extra steps that they were doing last year. That first year that with Haaland, that everyone on the team was so excited, ready to achieve something great. They won everything. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're not going to win anything this season. I just think it's going to be hard for them in the league because it's such a long format, because it's so many games. You know, it's now how many games that they've dropped points, Alex? I mean, even some of these games where they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, and they even in the game that they won recently, they went behind to Luton, didn't they? And then came back and won 2-1, and that was without Haaland as well. So... Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that Haaland and De Bruyne coming back is just going to fix everything.
Because Haaland and De Bruyne, like, who knows how long De Bruyne fitness, he could get hurt again. He hasn't played for a long time. You know how that is. The older you are, you know, you think your body's back great. How many times have we seen a player say, oh, I'm back, I feel great, and then they get hurt again for another 3-4 weeks. Takes them, you know, till next season to get back into the team and back into shape. So I'm not saying that's going to be De Bruyne.
Remember how much bigger the lead was
yes,
at the
but
top.
Do you remember, but
and
do you
they
remember
still
last
went
year?
On the 14-game winning
who,
streak.
Okay, but do you remember who, when Haaland goals dried up, when De Bruyne wasn't playing that well, do you remember who it was that carried the team through that 7, 8, 9, 10 game stretch? It was Ilkay Gundogan.
Sure.
And he scored, you know, bags of goals for this team. When they needed him, he got lots of winners, made huge plays. I mean, he was a massive player in the last few seasons, and I don't know if they have that same type of, you know, push, that same depth, that same type of, you know, just match winners in the team, everywhere on the team anymore.
I think we know that they do. It's just that we haven't seen those players do it yet. Like, Doku could turn into that. Grealish could, you know, refine the form of last season that that he was so excellent in during last season. He's kind of suffered from Doku coming in and taking that left wing spot and being so excellent. But, you know, all it takes is for like one of him or even Bernardo Silva. Bernardo Silva's had huge moments for this team. He could do it a couple more times the rest of this season. I can't turn my back on Manchester City. They're going to turn it around at some point. And you know what? This Club World Cup might be the moment. It might be the first silverware of the season for them that gives them that extra push and that extra belief that, you know, they crown themselves world champions and they win everything after that.
Like, how have Manchester City conceded just one less goal than Manchester United this year? I mean, that's wild. That's wild.
It's because they haven't had the same control in games. They need to get back to controlling these games.
They've conceded as many goals, Alex, as Everton.
Yeah, well, Sean Dyche has that effect on teams. We'll get to Everton in a second here. But yeah, let's move on. And also, I do want to give a good amount of praise to Roy Hodgson and Crystal Palace because they played it perfectly. I know they were down for most of the match, but one or two goals is not insurmountable, you know, and they kept that belief throughout.
Hey, fair play to them because they almost took points off Liverpool last week. Were, I think, very, very unlucky to not, you know, they were leading for what, 90 minutes or 89 minutes at Anfield or something? You know,
it was at Palace.
Good for them. Oh, it was at Palace. You're right. Good for them, though. Good for them that they. They went ahead in the second half, but you know they had the lead for you know a good portion of that second half, and then Liverpool again got another last minute winner. I mean, how many of those have they had this year? Them and Arsenal both getting a lot of last minute winners, but you know just for Crystal Palace, I think they're pretty safe the way that they're playing even against the big teams under Hodgson. I think he said it was his last season, but. Yeah, still very impressive manager, you know, a staple Premier League manager. Nothing bad to say about him. I think he was great at his time at Fulham, at Palace. He was never like an elite manager, but solid Premier League level manager who keeps showing his class. He never fell away like some of these other ones, you know?
Yeah, let's move on to the so-called marquee matchup of the weekend that ended 0-0 at Anfield. Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. The only real news of note from this game was Diogo Dalot's two yellow cards in quick succession that got him sent off in the 94th minute. But I think you have to come out of this one heaping a good amount of praise on Manchester United in the situation they're in with their injuries and the suspension of Bruno Fernandes. For them to remain resolute, defend for most of the match, had a couple of half chances on the counterattack here or there that Alisson and company kept out. And, you know, they've in the last two games at Anfield, the last 2 years they've gone to Anfield, they've lost 7-0 and 4-0 the year before that. So to come out of this with a point and, none conceded in this situation, I think is a positive result for Manchester United, especially with the pressure that they came under. You know, they did have the bonus of having Raphael Varane back in the starting lineup with Maguire injured and Lindelof injured in midweek against Bayern Munich last week. But, you know, next to Varane is still a fossil of a man in Johnny Evans. And if you told me that Liverpool weren't going to score at all with that lineup that Manchester United trotted out, I would have been very surprised. And, you know, here I am, surprised as hell that this game ended 0-0. As I kind of suggested last week, I think you suggested it as well with Bruno Fernandes, his suspension and Rashford mainly being put on the bench the last couple of games. Is them being out of the team something that Erik ten Hag needs to build on? Is that indicative of greater issues at Manchester United that, you know, those players maybe in
and
past years.
How do you trot
years,
out, you know, Johnny Evans in your back line and start Kobe Mainoo in midfield and still do okay? I mean, they could have won this game. I mean, it's not they didn't have almost any chances, but they had still some decent threat on the counterattack, and I thought kept Liverpool to not that many crazy good chances, you know? And I think Onana has been a keeper that's shown to have a lot of, errors to be prone, very error-prone keeper. But in this game, I thought he was really, really solid. And he showed kind of like, what we saw last year with Inter, where if a team that knows how to defend well in front of him, he looks a lot better as well. You know, he's not under pressure as much
from his own players, then he's able to perform at a higher level. And I think that you do need to build from that if you're Manchester United. I thought Rafael Varane coming back to the team was big. And I mean, the only reason Varane played is because Lindelof and Maguire were hurt, both who have been starting over him this, so far this season. Which I like.
Well, he was starting before his injuries. He was injured for a while, and then even though he was back available for selection,
he's been back available for 3 months, Alex.
I don't think it's been 3 months. I think it's been
that long. He just doesn't play him.
All right, maybe, but I don't remember him being available for 3 months. He was out injured for a good chunk of that time, and I think the thought process was that they're trying to sort of ease him back in and not, you know, re-aggravate the injury. But then they didn't really have a choice once Maguire and Lindelof went down injured. You'd think that Maguire, once he's healthy, would come back in, and it would be Maguire and Varane would be the preferred centre-back pairing. But I'm talking about specifically United's ability to get results against a team as good as this Liverpool one, who, by the way, had not dropped any points at home so far this season. They'd won every single game at home. United's next game is going to be at West Ham. It's not as tough of an away fixture as Liverpool, but it's still a very tough fixture for Manchester United to face. For them to have success as a team, do they need to continue with Rashford and Bruno on the bench this time so that they have a more solid and hardworking midfield in Mainoo, who you mentioned, Amrabat and McTominay?
Yeah, Alex, he came back in mid-October, so. Yeah.
That's not 3 months. It's a month and a half.
Okay, 2 months.
Okay. It's not 3 months, but coming back and being ready to play a full 90 minutes are two very different things, as you've seen with Reece James and Christopher Nkunku more recently for Chelsea are the two examples that come to mind for me as a Chelsea fan right off the bat. But again, I'm trying to redirect our focus away from their backline and more towards this question they have about, you know, they're two of their, you know, traditionally best attacking players, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford. They've now gotten one of their best results without either of them. And Rashford came in for this match, but, you know, he was started on the bench, and Garnacho's been, I think it's pretty safe to say, he's been better than Marcus Rashford playing in Rashford's preferred position on the left wing so far this season. So Garnacho, I don't think you're taking out of the team. Do you expect Bruno to be like right back into the starting lineup in this West Ham game on Saturday that they have?
I do. I mean, he's the captain, and I think United still have to try to make him work. I don't think he's actually past it. I think, you know, he's doesn't have the same like cohesiveness that he had a couple of years ago before Ronaldo came in midfield. And I think the constant switching of back line of midfielders, it's hurt him a lot. You know, he hasn't built that chemistry with that team that I think he would like. Even his forwards. I mean, the guys had just a constantly rotating lineup of players, people getting suspended, getting hurt. I think until we see a more settled Manchester United, and I think we're starting to see it. I think we're seeing players like Maguire and Evans, who I would have never thought could play at Manchester United. McTominay, who, you know, both Maguire and McTominay were almost sold to West Ham for $30 million. Remember, that was even, like, confirmed, and then suddenly, you know, it didn't happen. But these are the type of things that United, you know, they're going to have to sort out what players actually want to be there. You know, they can't have these players on huge wages. You know, there's still a big restructuring that needs to be done at United, but I think Ten Hag's maybe starting to sort it out. Not completely, but at least defensively, it looks like that's where he's starting. That's why I keep going back to the their back line, Alex, because I think that's where you got to start building your team. I mean, until you get that like defensive cohesion down, which we last year it kind of looked like there were periods of time where Manchester United were good defensively. It wasn't consistently the whole season, but I think that's where they need to get Pat down first. Getting Amrabat in midfield seems to be helping defensively as well. You know, there's steps to this, so I think they're starting to get through it a little bit, getting through the slog.
Well, turning the attention to Liverpool and kind of mixing this in with our preview for next week's big matchup, Liverpool hosting Arsenal at Anfield. Does this give you some hope for next weekend? You know, I know you got a good result, a draw at Anfield last season. But, you know, traditionally that hasn't been the happiest of hunting grounds for Arsenal.
I mean, we played phenomenally at Anfield last year. Deserved to win. I think the players are going to take heart in that. It seems like whenever we've had a stepping stone so far with this young team, the team stumbles. It seems like they come back and they perform better in the next time. So I expect, you know, we did it with City. You know, I think the first season we got destroyed completely. The second season, you know, we played them really, really well.
That was at home.
I know, we played them really well and then, you know, still lost. I think arguably outplayed City in that second game of the season, but then in the first game and lost. They destroyed us in the second game. But and then again this season we were finally able to beat them. I think with Liverpool it's been a similar progression where I don't see the same Liverpool team from old where they would blitz us and score a bunch of goals. I think we're a better team now, and I haven't seen anyone outplay us so far this season. I think we put in a better performance against Aston Villa than we did last year, and we lost.
Chelsea outplayed you, but okay.
It's circumstances to that game. But yes, Jorginho was in midfield, Alex. Come on. It's like, okay, I'll play in our first team this season. How about that? There was definitely reasons for that happening. I think we're going to be up for this game. I think that the team, you know, we've qualified through Champions League, gotten a good, I think we play Porto in Champions League knockout, so that should be a good, you know, not a crazy hard couple of games that we have later on in the season. But I think the team's going to be really motivated for this game, and I think we get a result again, at least a draw. I think a draw would be a good result for us, and I'd be happy with a draw because we'd stay top of the table. And, you know, we don't lose against our biggest rivals. The fact that we've lost away to Villa and Newcastle 1-0, both while, you know, having outplayed our opponent, is a little worrying. So I do want to see that trend stop, and I want to see us, you know, at least get a big result here. And I think we can do it. I mean, I think Liverpool haven't been exactly firing on all cylinders, Alex. They've been going behind in a bunch of games. They've been having to come back, leaving it late, and if they do that against us, it's not going to work. I mean, we're not going to let them get back into the game. And
are you sure about that? Because you did last year.
Yeah, but we're better than we were last year, Alex.
I don't know if that's true.
That's what I'm here to tell you today.
I really don't think you're better than you were last year. Let me just say, you're saying a draw would keep you top. I'm going to go ahead and call bullshit on that because on this Friday, Aston Villa are going to host Sheffield United. And if Villa win that one, then they would go a point or 2 points clear of you guys at the top. So a draw in this game, the Arsenal-Liverpool one, would be great for Aston Villa. They could be top going into Christmas. So
we all know how that goes, Alex.
True. They may still choke it. But what I'm trying to say is that a draw in this Liverpool game will most likely not keep you at the top of the Premier League table. Because I'm telling you, as someone who just saw their crap team beat an even crapper Sheffield United team, Villa are going to wipe the floor with Sheffield on Friday night, and they're going to be top at least until Saturday. We haven't talked much about Liverpool so far today, so I do want to mention them because this is like two games in a row, maybe more, but I could definitely say for these past two games, the Manchester United goalless draw and the Crystal Palace win before that, they don't seem as free-flowing and playing as well as they had been, before. There's still all the weapons seem to be available to them. You see the lineups, and it's, you know, Nunez, Diaz, Salah with Szoboszlai in midfield, and, Wataru Endo sort of at the base of midfield and Gravenberch. But it seems like they're, you know, struggling with these teams that have sat deep and defended deep against them, which is, you know, a common frustration of the very top teams. Arsenal aren't going to do that, which is why I'm not really that worried for Liverpool about this game. You guys aren't going to, you know, sit off them and absorb pressure and look to counterattack, maybe for periods of the game when Liverpool really get going. But I think for the most part, the fact that Arsenal are going to go to Anfield looking to get on the ball themselves and push higher up and press Liverpool equally will help Liverpool get over their issues they've had in these last two games. Am I wrong in that? Do you think Arsenal do sort of, like, or would approach it in a more cautious manner, sitting deep defensively? And
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we did that against Manchester City at home. I mean, I thought we played very, very controlled, kind of built our way into the game. I don't think we'll take any risks early. I think we'll do what I think that's been the MO so far this season, Alex. It's been against, and that's why you don't see it yet, but I do think I see it now. I do think we're better than last season because we haven't started the season like we did last year, right? That's why maybe you're thinking that we're not as good. I think we're pacing ourselves this year. I think it's not the same frenetic pace that we tried to put on in every single game last year. I think it's a much more methodical approach. I think it's a more developed approach. I think we've started to, you know, incorporate someone like Kai Havertz into the team, who now, you know, has 4 goals in his last 6 games for us. Suddenly he's found his finishing touch, Alex, which, you know, I hate to say it for the rest of the league, but that when you have now 6 players who are, you know, playing for us, our front three and our three in midfield are all very legitimate goal threats. I think it's a very hard team to defend against, and our back line is, I think, you know, very clearly or close to the best team defensively in the league. I think, you know, we've got a lot of depth defensively. We've got players who can play in different positions, but I think, you know, Saliba and Gabriel are the best center back partnership in the league. You know, at me if you think anything different, but
at Javier Rev9, please do if you think anything different.
But yeah, no, I don't know, Alex. I feel like if there's a time to beat Liverpool at Anfield, it's now. So I'm gonna say we go and do it. And I think Liverpool have been a little underwhelming in the last month. Like I said, going behind a lot. So I'm gonna say 2-1 Arsenal.
Yeah, I feel like I can agree with you on a lot of those points and still say that Liverpool win 3-2, and that's what I'm gonna stick with. I think the open nature of the game.
I don't think it's going to be like a super open game, though. I mean, we just saw Liverpool against United. We finished 0-0. Arsenal against City was 1-0. It's not going to be 3-2.
I don't think you guys are going to be that
I was even thinking,
deep.
No, I was even thinking 2-1 is too much. Actually, I'm going to change. I'm going to say 1-0 Arsenal.
So you're saying you're keeping Liverpool to a clean sheet as well?
Absolutely.
You're holding them at Anfield. Yes. Okay, I'll let you.
United just did that. United just did that with Johnny Evans and Varane, and you don't think we can do that?
I think you could do it if you wanted to approach the game that way, but you won't approach the game that way because you guys
don't have to approach the game that way.
You guys are better than United.
We will approach it defensively, and I think we'll build. Like I said, we'll build into the game. It's not the same Arsenal as last year. Like, we're so much more methodical now. We probe, we wait, we try to figure out the weaknesses. We don't just go rushing in and blow all our load in the first half, in the first 30 minutes, like we did last year. And it blitzed a lot of teams. It worked a lot. It's not sustainable for a whole season.
You said that before the Villa game. You said that before the Newcastle game. And look how those went.
I'm still proud of both of the performance in both of those games. We're still top of the table, Alex. It's not like we just because we lost those games 1-0 suddenly the team was derailed. No, our team immediately picked back up and dominated Brighton right afterwards.
I didn't say you were derailed. I just said you're going to lose this game at Anfield, which I don't think is a big stretch. And I'm going to stick with 3-2. I think Liverpool find their mojo again with more space to exploit.
Way too many goals. Way too many goals.
All right, we'll find out. We'll find out before Christmas. All right, I feel like a game that we have to hit on and recap before we go is this Burnley 0 Everton 2 game, just because it was the return of Sean Dyche to Burnley as an Everton manager. He spent almost 10 years as the manager at Burnley, didn't get to play them last year, obviously, because they weren't in the Premier League, and went there and beat them 2-0 in a relegation 6-pointer. I just want to say, I this isn't to you, Javier. This is just putting it out into the ether. I just want to say I told you so. Like, Burnley, Luton, Sheffield United, the promoted teams, they're all getting relegated. And this was the nail in the coffin, and it's not even the new year yet. I'm fully confident. I was confident before, even more confident now. Those three teams are getting relegated because if a team like Everton can turn it around and go to Burnley, change their system because of injuries. They felt they needed to change their system to a 5 at the back, basically. Give Burnley all of the possession like Burnley want, and then hit them twice in the first half for 2 goals, and then just see the game out from there. Burnley and those other teams down there really don't have a chance. Yeah, they'll pick up points and frustrate people here and there, but in terms of consistency of results, that which is what you need to stay out of the relegation zone and not get relegated, I just don't see any of these teams doing it. I think it's fair to say Burnley were the ones that most people gave the best chance to you know, be one of the promoted teams that stayed up this year. Sheffield and Luton, it was never really... No one was really backing them to stay up. It was Burnley were the team that people were thinking, oh, they're, you know, a progressive attacking team. They'll be able to make the leap. And they're just not mature enough. They're relying on too many young players to pull off that style of play. And this just solidified it for me. I don't know if you got to like see the highlights for this one or what you thought, but I just wanted to put a lot of praise on Everton and solidify the fact that those promoted teams are all going back down.
Yeah, I mean, what a crazy like statistic that Everton have, you know, keeping four clean sheets like this. You would have never thought that, you know, after that point deduction and then I think they lost 3-0 the next game. We kind of thought, oh, maybe they're, you know, it's gonna affect them. They're gonna get dragged down to the relegation. They absolutely shut up that idea and. You know, threw it off a cliff because, yeah, four straight wins from there, emphatic wins.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the stats as I wrote them down, but it's the first time in 3 years that Everton have won four games in a row in the league, and it's the first time in 21 years they've won four in a row without conceding any goals during that time. And David Moyes was the manager last time they pulled that off. So props to Sean Dyche, and he did it with a bunch of, you know, his former Burnley players. You had... Tarkovsky, Dwight McNeil, even Michael Keane, who scored the second goal. He spent some time with Sean Dyche at Burnley almost a decade ago now. It was one of the games that it was like I had my eye on for this weekend. We didn't get to preview it because I don't know, it's not quite the level of Liverpool Manchester United, but it was a very important game in you know, deciding how this relegation battle is going to go. Are there any other games from last weekend you want to mention before we sign off for the night?
Yeah, I thought that West Ham 3-0 win over Wolves was pretty impressive. You know, I think Kudus got a brace and Paqueta hat-trick of assists. So that's, you know, Bowen scored again. So West Ham kind of back on track. It looked like they'd been, you know, kind of derailed and were on bad form. But this is a big result from a Wolves team that had been playing well. And then, the like you said, Alex, Villa keep winning, 2-1 win against Brentford. It looked like this might be the game where they drop points, but Benmi red card, you know, kind of drove the game into a frantic, crazy game where I think there was like 11 yellow cards, 2 red cards. I mean, it ended up Boubacar Kamara's out for 3 games as well. I mean, I think Emi Martinez should have been sent off. Just wild game. Yeah, somehow Aston Villa keep on doing it. I don't know how. I don't know. But I think, you know, Unai, Alex, they're not going to keep this up all year. It's going to be March. It's going to come around, you know, March, and they're still going to be around the top of the table. And then they're going to lose a bunch of games and come crashing and burning like we did last year. They might even crash and burn outside of top four, but we'll see. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah, I think this season would be a very positive one for Villa if they sort of hang around that top four.
That'd be amazing.
And then the other thing they need to do, they need to win the Europa Conference League. They've gotten out of their group in it. They have a much better team than anyone else in that competition. If they don't win that, they need to really take a long look in the mirror.
He loves his smaller European trophies.
Yeah. I'll mention a little bit about Chelsea before we go, because I think I said last week that if Sheffield go to the bridge and beat us, we'll do a whole what's wrong with Chelsea bit. That obviously didn't happen. I was wrong.
I said you were going to win 3-0, Alex, but, you know, I was close.
Yeah, you were 3-0. One Armando Broja tap-in miss away from being right. I don't want to say too much because at the end of the day, this is Sheffield, the worst team in the league. It took us far too long to, you know, get into gear and to get our noses in front and then get the second. But it is important that Chelsea at least stopped the rot. You know, we'd had so many bad performances and bad results, specifically in away games like the United and Everton games. this is the first time it feels like all year, pretty much since when your dad was in London back in the end of last season, that Chelsea have gotten two wins at home in a row. So it's nice to, even against lesser opposition, Brighton is a somewhat impressive result because we were down a man for an entire half of that game and still won 3-2. This one, it's more expected to win a game comfortably like this, 2-0 against Sheffield. You just got to keep it going. You got to keep it going into even Newcastle and the Carabao Cup coming up this midweek. I think tomorrow we play them. If you win that Newcastle game, then you can kind of start to think, all right, we're back on track. We're getting a run of wins together. Those have been so rare for Chelsea this calendar year. 2023 has been one completely to forget as a Chelsea fan. That'll take them in any form that they come, even against a crap team like Sheffield. And I've got to say, we had a debut for Georgi Petrovic, the Serbian international goalkeeper that was signed from the New England Revolution in MLS in the summer. He didn't have much to do in this game, but it was a nice little debut, easy game for him where, you know, he could just sort of chill back there, make one save from a free kick at the end of the game to keep the clean sheet and move on to the Newcastle game, and then Wolves away on Christmas Eve, which, by the way, I'm livid that we have to play a game on Christmas Eve. That is farcical. There should be no games on Christmas Eve or Christmas. Save it for Boxing Day, but whatever. That's just the Premier League being assholes yet again. All right, Javier, unless you have a fantasy kitchen to update us on, I think we're going to close things out there.
No, not today, Alex. Just because of time constraints, I'll close the kitchen for today.
All right, Javier. Thanks for jumping on with me. If you want to follow Javier, let him know who the actual best center back partnership in the league is, if you can think of one. You can do so on Twitter, now known as X, at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Keep an eye out for a pod probably Sunday afternoon after that Chelsea Wolves fixture closes out the fixtures on Sunday. Getting you ready for those Boxing Day and post Christmas fixtures later in the week. Happy Christmas, everyone. And until next time, see ya.